It's the Deseret News Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 287. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. In this episode, Matt and I examine why our expectations seem to rise in the summer, despite finding nothing new out about the football team. Why does 11-2 seem so possible in July? We also break down the off seasons and do little mini previews for both Utah and Utah State, and then we discuss how Independence is treating BYU. This is the Deseret News Rise and Shout Podcast. Get this and other great shows at DeseretNews.com/podcasts. Join our conversation on Facebook at Facebook.com/RiseAndShout, and listen to us right now. So, Matt, you saw Spider-Man.
I did.
And?
I did. It was a homecoming of sorts.
Wow.
Sorry.
Wow, that's all you got? That's all
you got? Starting off on a real low note. Yeah, I'm trying to set the bar low tonight, you know.
Or, is this one of those under-promise, over-deliver type of initiatives?
You mean they're on my joke there?
Yeah, like that's like kind of an under-promise, but then the rest of the show is going to be mediocre, but it'll seem better by comparison.
I'm hoping that the rest of the show is slightly above average. But, you know, we'll see. But I think I started us out on the right note. Like, I think it's an upward trend from here.
Yeah, it can't go anywhere but up, I hope. Matt, yikes. I also saw a movie this weekend. I saw War for the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, how was that?
Fantastic. I don't think it's my favorite of the three, but I think those Planet of the Apes movies, the new ones directed by Matt Reeves, are possibly the best movie series currently running.
Are you serious?
I am serious.
Oh, I need to get with the program. I haven't seen any of these.
Just a hair above the Fast and the Furious franchise. Just kidding. Way above Fast and
the
Furious.
Wow.
But I enjoy them. I mean, they're different movies. They're not as fun as, say, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. They're more fun than the DC Extended Universe. But anyway, it was really, really good. And it's strange to think that these acting jobs can be done so well when it's motion capture and animation with the apes.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
No joke.
Stuff they're doing with them computers these days.
The animation is so amazing that somebody in our theater afterwards, she turned to the guy she was there with and said,
"Oh no, please don't.
No, please,
say this didn't actually happen."
Yes. How did they get all those monkeys, which, by the way, they're not monkeys, they're apes, to do all of those things? She figured as the guy and the other guy next to them were just trying to, like, see if she was joking, she figured they were using computer animation to move their mouths.
Like they did in Babe.
Yeah, like they did in Babe. So,
ram you.
So it was pretty funny. But go see if you haven't seen Spider-Man Homecoming. And then if you haven't
I refuse to accept that you actually overheard that conversation.
I am telling you right now that I thought she was just messing with the guys, right? Like, you know, it's after the movie and
that's funny. It's kind of dad joke-ish.
Yeah,
funny.
Dad joke-ish, but potentially funny to say it. I might have said it to my kids if we had watched it together.
Totally would have said that.
Yeah. And so that's what I thought was happening. And so I was sitting – now, my wife and kids are out of town. So I've been going to movies by myself, which I know some people find weird, but I don't find it weird at all. What does it matter?
It's not weird.
You go to a movie and nobody – it's not like you talk to the people you're with anyway. Like, go to a movie together. Who cares? So I'm sitting there next to another guy who's there by himself. And, you know, the movie's done, and there's no after credit scene or anything, so I was just kind of sitting there thinking about the movie and hearing this conversation. The guy next to me turns to me. We haven't spoken, of course, the whole time because it would be weird.
Yeah, you can't do that.
He turns to me and goes, "Do you think she's serious?" And I said, no, she's messing with him. But after about 30 seconds of this, 40 seconds, he and I looked at each other again and were like, so it's still possible she was messing, but because they started razzing her and she didn't, you know, she then started saying, "Well, it looks so realistic," which is true. The computer animation is spectacular. And I mean, they go in close. Like, you see eyes, faces. It's not like it's all... All three movies, they do a fantastic job. But it's Andy Serkis, who, of course, was Gollum. Gollum! And is also in the Marvel Cinematic Universe and will be the bad guy in the upcoming Black Panther film. So there you go. All right, Matt.
Wow, look at that.
Let's jump right... I don't have any cougars in the news today. Do you still get to say
I saw
that?
On the show notes. I saw on the show notes you had under cougars in the news, War for the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, I may have put that. I might have put that in the wrong spot.
That's not the cougars in the news, even a little bit.
No, it's not. So we're just gonna skip the cougarfan.com cougars in the news today.
Cougars in the news,
and then go. Well, this could be a cougars in the news. Matt J. Drew, friend of the podcast, J. Drew in the Salt Lake Tribune this week, had a couple of stories based on interview he did with men's basketball assistant coach Quincy Lewis. Okay?
All right.
Now, do you think he says his first name Quincy or Quincy?
See, I don't know. Somebody'd have to ask that.
Because where we grew up, there's a town with the same spelling, and how do you say it, Matt?
Quincy.
Quincy. But I bet you it's Quincy. Right?
Well, how did John Quincy Adams pronounce it?
Who knows? I mean, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, but isn't that probably the way that's the way I'd go for.
Well,
it's
sure.
Also a T-stop.
Yeah.
A couple T-stops in Quincy.
You know, it's not as fun to go on the T now because they have automated voices on the train telling you the T-stops.
So lame. They probably pronounce everything normal.
Yeah, they pronounce it Pack without Street. The accent. They don't do Pack Street. No, they don't do that. That now it would be, the next stop is Park Street.
Oh, that just...
It's terrible. It's like
ruining the whole city.
Moving walkway thing here in the Minneapolis airport. It has a British accent.
Like, well, there's a heavy British influence in Minneapolis.
No, there isn't. There's no British influence in Minneapolis. None. It should be.
There's a British influence across this entire country. Like, we were kind of settled by the Brits originally.
Not here. There's not British people didn't settle here.
And that's true. They weren't quite hardy enough, folks.
That's right. It was Scandinavian folk.
For the Great White North.
Yeah, that's right. They weren't. Bunch of wimps. Anyway.
Wow. You just insulted an entire country of people. I mean, it's a small country, but it's a powerful country.
And quite a bit of our own heritage.
That's true.
So, anyway, Matt, we have spent a lot of time not talking about anything. So let's talk about something. All right?
All right, get back to this interview.
Yes. So the interview, there's a lot of things in his couple articles that he had. But I wanted to pull out two things. The first thing is, Matt, lots of change in there, and they talk about that, Mika being gone, and he says all the right thing right there. Peyton Dastrup is who he talked a lot about there, so let's talk about that. He calls him heir apparent to Mika's minutes. How do you feel about Peyton Dastrup taking over the bulk of Mika's minutes in the 2017-18 season?
You know, I hear you there, but and I understand what he's saying about from a skill standpoint, Peyton's right there. But I kind of go back to what Lewis said early on. Well, at least the way it's written here. It's earlier in the article. He says, you lose a kid like that, and the truth of the matter is you can't get one single player that is going to replace him with the timing of it all. You hope your aggregate of kids can help make up for that type of loss. And I think that's really what's – I don't know. When we talk about somebody getting the bulk of those minutes, you know, I think you can say that all you want, but especially early on in the season, I don't think we're going to see one guy soaking up all that time.
No, I agree.
And if we do, it might be somebody that we really don't expect. It could be a completely different position.
Well, I think they just won't play as many bigs minutes total.
Exactly.
I think you'll have more undersized lineups where you have Yoli Childs and four wing players, for example, I think is something that could happen. But you make some good points. Another thing he said in a separate article was that they're not going to have specialists on defense and offense, that it's going to be spread more equally as opposed to what they've done the last couple of seasons. Matt, does that sit well with you?
You know, I don't like that, to be honest. And I understand... Maybe it's a little bit different in basketball, but I think you have to be able to, you got to play to people's strengths. And this is one of those situations we've talked like before, is if you don't feel like you can segment into specialties, then, you know, it just worries me that maybe there's a skill or there's a piece of the game out there somewhere that you don't feel like you're staffed to do well. And so now you got to spread too thin. That's what makes me nervous about that type of approach. Now, it might not be true. It might not be the reality of it in this particular situation, but that's what I hear when I listen to that.
Yeah, it makes me a little nervous, but it's also a little bit out of context. We don't know exactly what the question Jay asked was. Sometimes it's hard to parse through these things, but the flip side to that is, it's not uncommon on the smaller basketball staffs for people to do more than one thing, right? That's just, historically, that's not strange to do that way. I hope there's more emphasis just put on the defense, as we've talked about, whether that's, you know, new assistant coach, new/blast from the past, assistant coach Heath Schroyer, hammering on that, or somebody else. In the end, I just hope they do more of that this year regardless. So, all right, Matt, we're moving on from basketball. Talk about football.
Yes.
Biggest news of the week is that BYU landed standout wide receiver prospect Gunnar Romney, which, by the way, does that not seem like the perfect BYU football player name, Gunnar Romney?
I don't think Gunnar had a choice. Did he have a choice? Could he have gone somewhere else?
I feel like, you know, he was recruited by Utah and Arizona State. He's currently a 3-star, but Mitch Harper on Twitter put out there that he thinks when all is said and done, he ends up being a 4-star recruit because of how well he's done. 6'3", 200. Matt, big guy, supposed to be very fast. Watch some of his tape. Wow is the word that comes to mind. There's really a lot of stuff there, Matt. So what do you think about Gunnar Romney? We're getting friend of the podcast, Dick Harmon, and others are saying he could be the next Austin Colley.
Yeah, when you watch some of that film, you kind of think that, right? You look at him,
and
kid looks like he can do some special things. And if he gets on the right, if he gets on the same page with the right quarterback at BYU, I think we could be looking at a real fun career.
Yeah.
In the making here with this Gunnar Romney. But it also seems like this is a pretty big get from a recruiting standpoint staff.
Very big.
And, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, Kalani as a recruiter, and when he came in, that was the big sell. And the pipeline of Polynesian athletes and some of these things. But this guy is he's a really, really well respected position player with some skills and had some choices to go to a couple other programs, and
I think this is
a big deal, and I think this is a guy, and I know I always say, you know, wait till they prove it on the field and all this, but this guy could pan out to be pretty good.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, right? Recruiting matters. We've talked about this before. It's not some shell game. It actually matters over time. The teams that recruit better have better results on the field, right? And it's easy to say, like you said, that. And of course, there are exceptions both ways. Big-time recruits that flame out and guys that weren't hardly recruited at all who turn in fantastic college careers. But most guys end up playing about somewhere near the place where they wanted to – where they, you know, where they were graded at in high school. This one's a big get. If you look at that 2018 class, Matt, already, there's a lot of good players on that class. And if this class comes together and all these guys sign, if they're able to land 4-star linebacker recruit Merlin Robertson, who's got USC on the page, as well as, you know, there's a couple other guys that are hanging out there that are potentials as well. Matt, I think this is this could be his best recruiting class so far, and potentially the best one BYU's had in quite a few years.
Oh yeah, I mean, and you look at you know, you think about this Tanner McKee and Merlin Robertson, and even some of these other guys that have already committed that might not be on the big, on, you know, big radars. But what's interesting to me is, you know, I try not to get sucked too much into the recruiting, right? I mean, right. It is important, and I agree with what you're saying. You know, and over time, you have to recruit well if you want to be successful. What's interesting to me is that, you know, if you kind of go back in time, you think about one of the big knocks on the previous coaching staff was the way that they approached recruiting. It was really a "you tell me why I should bring you to Provo" type of approach. And, you know, and I don't know, you know, I don't know that that approach works with some of the players that these guys are going out and getting now. And I think the feel around the program is a little bit different, and is making it attractive in a different way to some of these guys. You know, but that being said, I mean, the previous group, I mean, they did, you know, Jay Keeps did flame out, but at the time, I mean, that was a really big get.
Yep.
But you know what? I think they would have had Jake. I don't think they had to try to get Jay Keeps. I think Jay Keeps wanted to go to BYU. He wanted to be the BYU quarterback.
Right, right.
As a matter of fact, I don't think they wanted him, right? If you go back in time, I don't think Bronco wanted him to come.
Yeah, I don't know if that's
they kind of got backed in. They got backed into a, well, you know, and then they clearly didn't know what to do.
Clearly, and they muffled that one pretty
yeah, bad. And he may not have been as good as everybody thought he was on paper. I mean, there's a lot of things that went wrong there. But anyway, my point is, for years, I paid very little attention to the recruiting. It wasn't flashy, which is fine. But we weren't chasing after some of these athletes. I feel like I just don't think it was the same. I don't know that Gunnar Romney comes to BYU 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
Yeah, I don't know about that either. I think they had the emphasis, though. I mean, a lot of being made out as if they didn't try. I think they tried and they went after these type of players. The question is whether you can seal the deal, right? Whether the culture and the other things besides the allure of, you know, obviously the kids that grow up and want to play at BYU no matter what, like a Tanner Mangum, like a Jake Heaps, they may end up there no matter who the coaching staff is, assuming the team's not terrible and all that kind of stuff, right? But assuming those things are true, you know, that's a big deal. But to your point, there, we're getting some guys now that I think 5 years ago, at least in this 2018 class, that would have probably chosen to go someplace else. And that's a big deal. If we have a top 30 recruiting class in 2018, that is a big deal to going towards BYU taking another step as a program. So, you know, and hats off to Kalani Sitake and his staff for, so far, I mean, nothing's done until signing day and people are there, but so far it looks like a great 2018 class.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, the only thing that matters is they got to get here and they got to win games.
That's right. I mean, good recruiting classes are one thing. Winning games is what we actually care about. Matt, also in the Deseret News, Brandon Gurney, friend of the podcast, Brandon Gurney, wrote a story about Jonah Treneman. And basically the title of the story is "Treneman Hopes to Make His Superior Speed More Relevant in 2017. Matt, we've all been kind of waiting on Treneman to break out a little bit. You know, that would be, you know, that is not, it hasn't happened exactly the way we thought it would, but he's supposed to have sub 4.4, 40 speed, you know, but so far it hasn't paid off. Matt, what do you expect out of Jonah Treneman this year?
You know, I think that he's definitely mentally prepared to make that step up. And I think if you go back, you know, there have been some real flashes, and this one of those is referenced here in this article right at the beginning of the season. First play from scrimmage against Toledo. I guess that wasn't too early in the season, but that 75-yard touchdown catch?
Yeah.
I mean, that was amazing, right? You know, I think there have been some flashes there. I think it seems like this is a guy who is poised to have a big season. It takes some time to get used to a new offense and get that stuff installed, and the coaches have kind of figure out who their leaders are and who they're going to push. And you look at some of the quotes in this article from Ben Cahoon talking about the conversations he's had with Treneman and how they need and are expecting him to step up. and be a big player for him. So it sounds like the coaches have identified him as somebody that can step up and do that. He's clearly got the physical assets, you know, with his speed and hands, that I think this is a guy that could turn into being a special receiver for us. I mean, and you know, and Cahoon could just, I mean, it could just be coach speak, right, with Cahoon, but Cahoon is definitely a guy who's going to be able to evaluate and see decent talent.
Yeah.
When it's there. And so I think we've got all the pieces. Everything is correct. Everything's there for the making of a good season from Treneman. So we'll just have to see if it comes to fruition on the field.
So in this article and a couple other articles recently, wide receiver coach Ben Cahoon has said a couple things that I found interesting. Part of this relates to Treneman, part of it's broader. He wanted them to catch 2,000 balls this summer, okay, which I think is awesome. That seems like a lot, Matt.
Yeah, it's a large number.
Okay, the second one is he doesn't care how fast they are. He wants them to be great route runners. Who does that sound like?
That's good stuff.
Sounds like Ben Cahoon, right, as a wide receiver, right? He was not the fastest, though he was a fast guy. Like, don't – not as if he was slow. I'm pretty sure.
But you know, fast is really only important. You know, if you're going to try and just blow by everybody, right? Which is kind of what like Todd Watkins style. You know, when Todd Watkins first came in, it was kind of like, hey, Todd, just run past everybody, and we're just going to chuck it. You know, because he's pretty fast.
Yeah,
but the only time it matters, right?
But running
is way more important.
How many track stars have flamed out as football wide receivers? A ton, right?
A ton of them.
Because in the end, if all you can do is run really fast, I can design a defense that totally neutralizes that, right? I just put a safety on top of you, or I get a defensive back who happens to be nearly as fast as you. And if you're just going to run in a straight line, he can anticipate and beat you.
Run routes that are easy for him to adjust to on the fly, or things that he can read easily.
Yeah.
Doesn't help.
If you're just going to run a, you know, basically, you know, schoolyard pass routes, you know, that can be defended. The difference is if you can combine that speed with good route running, then all of a sudden you're a wide receiver, right? You go from a fast guy to a wide receiver. Austin Cawley comes to mind. Watkins is a good example. These were folks with speed who could also run great routes, but we've also had a lot of wide receivers at BYU who were probably, for college wide receivers, average or below average in speed, who had terrific careers, right? Because they were so good at running routes, at reading defenses, at being where they thought. Matt, the other part of this that hurt Treneman and any speedsters that we had on the roster was Hill was not great at throwing deep passes. So even if your speed got you past the secondary, you ran a good route and beat the guy with speed, it wasn't – this will be different this year with Tanner, right? Treneman.
Yeah, and Cahoon went right after that in this article. He said you can't be a deep threat if you can't connect.
Yep.
You know, so you can have a guy who runs routes real well and is as fast as you want, but if your quarterback can't hit him 30 yards downfield, no defense is going to respect that or worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. So, I think there are a lot of factors. I mean, Treneman has the chance to be the man, right? He is the top returning wide receiver from a statistics standpoint. Last year's top three guys are gone. So Treneman has a chance. This is his year now. I don't know if you and I have talked about this. We both think it's probably him that leads the team in catches this year, but it's his time for sure. All right, Matt. So let's move on. We got our first tweet bag question of the day.
Tweet bag.
This is from James Lowe on Facebook. You can actually, if you want to send us a tweet bag question, you can do it on Twitter at @BYU_RiseShout, like James did on Facebook at facebook.com/riseandshout, or you can send us an old fashioned email at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. One word, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. All right, so he says, so far, the time machine, we've been doing these time machine episodes, has been used only to go back in time. Let's shift the gears and go forward to October 16th. At this point, we've just played Mississippi State and are on to the softer part of the schedule. First question, what will our record be at this point in the schedule? And second, what is going to be the narrative surrounding the team. Matt, you're up first. What is our record going to be after that Mississippi State game?
So, well, you're six games in at this point, right?
I don't know. You count them.
Yeah, I did. I just, here, it's actually seven. Because I keep looking at Portland State like it's a preseason game.
Ah, yes. It counts.
It counts. It's a real game, right? And the good news is it'll end up in the win column.
That's right. That's right. All right. So you're stalling. What's the record going to be? Six games in.
3-3.
3-3. Okay. Who are the three wins against in your head? Portland?
Portland.
Utah?
Utah.
Utah State.
Yep.
And then losses.
No, you can't be 3-3. You're seven games in. This is after the Mississippi State
game. Oh, after. Right? You're right. Seven games in. So you're 3-4. Or you're 4-3.
Right now, I'm going to say 3-4.
All right. So the wins are who we just said, though. Portland, Utah, and Utah State. That's who you've got in your head?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So if you're 4-3, likely the game you're going to flip over is Boise or Mississippi State.
Right. I think you could easily go from 3-4 to 4-3 on one of those two games.
Okay. So then, really, what we're saying here is that the top upside is 5-2. Because those Boise State, Mississippi State games are winnable, even if we aren't favored in those games.
Yeah. Okay. I think the LSU game's a really tough, tall order. The Wisconsin game's going to be really tall.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about those games. So let's talk about this, Matt. You're 3-4. What's the narrative? I agree with you. I think 3-4 is the most likely outcome of those first seven games headed into the soft backside of the schedule. What's the narrative around this team?
Yeah, I think the narrative around the team is you're trying to get to 10 wins.
But, I mean, how are fans talking about the team? What's the story for that team? I mean, are people happy? Are people upset? Is the shine worn off Kalani Sitake and all of a sudden they're going to be out with the pitchfork saying that we're underachieving?
I think you have a complete Twitter meltdown at that point. You know, there will be people out there who will be done with Sitake at that point. I think that's definitely the case. You know,
there's going to be people asking for Tanner to be replaced as QB.
That's right. They're going to want Bo in there or some, you know, Coy or somebody, right?
Somebody. They're just going to say, I want somebody else in there.
Right. You know, all of that stuff will be going on. I don't know how loud or how real any of that gets. I mean, people who understand how this really works will see that for what it is. You know, Sitake is going to, you know, these aren't even all his players, right?
But even if it is all his players, we've talked about this in the last couple of episodes. LSU, playoff contender, top 15 team, okay? Wisconsin, playoff contender, top 8 team. Mississippi State, SEC team on the road. Boise State could be a bounce back year top 30 team. I mean, it's even if he had all of his players, there's a very good chance you drop all four of those games, right? I mean, it's just it's a tough schedule. I mean, I hope you're right. That's what the narrative, there will be some of that. I hope the most of us are just feeling like, oh gosh, you know, at least we're not 2-5, right?
Well, another thing is what happens is after that point, I think you win out. You win out and you know, your downside is you're a 9-win team, you win a bowl game, you're a 10-win team. You know, and depending on how you did in those losses against LSU, Wisconsin, and whoever else, you know, you could at 10 wins with that kind of a schedule. I mean, it's not out of the question you get ranked.
It is not out of the question. It depends probably on who you play in that bowl game and how you do in it. But you could finish the year, right? Yeah.
And how some of these other teams do, right? So if you manage to beat, you know, depending on the scenarios we just walked through, right? Say you win the Boise State or the Mississippi State game, but then they go on to have a pretty good season.
Yeah,
after
for sure.
That, I mean, that could do well for you.
I mean, if you're competitive against
Wisconsin and LSU, if you can stay in that game, maybe you beat Utah, like you were about to say, you beat Utah and they turn out to compete.
Yeah, they turn out to, you know, be one of the better teams, you know, top four teams in the in the Pac-12 or something. There's, I don't know. I think people are going to be disappointed, right? I think nationally, though, no one's going to look at that and be like, wow, is that program falling apart? You know what I mean?
Well, the only people who will feel like that's underachieving are going to be BYU fans.
Well, let me, I didn't put this in the notes for you, Matt, but we have a email question from Ryan Crockett, okay? And he says, by the way, he's a millennial without Twitter.
Does such a thing exist?
Apparently.
He's like an ultra hipster, he's too cool for Twitter.
That's cool. He can be too cool for Twitter.
That's like meta. I don't even know what to do with that. Way to go, Crockett. Way to go.
This is what he says. Does the summer lull exist to help Kool-Aid sink in? Before spring, I was thinking 9-4, maybe 10-3. But now, after mulling through the roster time and again, and just dreaming about the schedule, I think our defense gets us 10-3 for sure. So he's thinking 4-3 in that first seven games. Maybe 11-2. By next week, I'm thinking 12-1. Doesn't sound that ridiculous. Have you guys experienced this phenomena? Do I need help? I'm really struggling to stay realistic as time goes on. Hashtag blue Kool-Aid. Hashtag not limited to 140. Hashtag climb in.
Yes!
Hashtag gone mail. Hashtag one mail. I'm not sure exactly what that last hashtag is. But by the way, mad hashtag game for a guy that doesn't use Twitter. So to answer Ryan's question, Matt, I'll say this. I think a lot of us have this, right?
Everybody does this. We all do this.
No new data, right? We know nothing more about the team since spring ball, really. Except for some transfers and different things. But nothing that materially changes how that team should perform. And yet, Matt, we still raise our expectations.
But what's interesting is you think about the conversation you and I are having right now. And if you go back over the last couple of months, how many times have we walked through this schedule? And as we've walked through this schedule previously, I've called wins against all of those first seven teams except for LSU and Wisconsin at one point or another.
Yeah.
I think I've called a win in all of those games.
Yes.
Okay, maybe I've swapped Boise State for Mississippi State or whatever.
But for whatever reason,
here we are in the middle of July, right? And I'm Debbie Downer all of a sudden. You know, I think we're 3-4 at the end of that seven-game stretch. But this phenomenon he's describing is certainly not – you're not alone, Mr. Crockett. By the way, I'm only going to refer to him by his last name.
All right. Call him Crockett.
Because I think it's awesome.
It is quite awesome.
Not just because of Miami Vice, but mostly. I don't think he's alone, right? And we've all done that before.
Oh, yeah,
but
for sure.
That's why the BYU fans will be going crazy, you know, when we get to the end of September or even halfway through September and you're 2-2 and you come out of the Wisconsin game and now you've lost LSU and you've lost Wisconsin and people are going to be losing their minds. And the thing that they're going to be saying is we can always beat the teams we're supposed to beat. But what we need to be able to do is beat the teams that people don't expect us to.
Yeah, see, if that's the narrative,
that's
going to
be the narrative.
It's
that, but
dumb.
That's going to be the narrative.
It's just
but people
stupid.
People are going to walk in with that. But this is what's going to happen. We're all sitting here all summer. We're reading these articles about Tanner McKee and Gunnar Romney and these guys coming.
Yeah, but those guys aren't even like, going to play.
Yeah, but Satake's a genius. You read this stuff and you're like, oh, the guy's a genius. I love him. I love what he's doing. Look at him. Look at him in the student section. Look at him taking the players like – look how enthusiastic everybody is. Look how confident they all are. And you get in there and you know, and it does and you feel like a loss to LSU and a loss to Wisconsin doesn't jive with those expectations.
Yeah, well that's
right?
Just dumb though. It's stupid. LSU and Wisconsin are two of the best teams in the country, and they could both be in the college football playoff. If we're 1-3 after that first four games, the answer may still be we're a top 35 team. Right? Like even losing to Utah, because Utah, we're going to talk about them here in a second. I'm not 100% sure how good Utah is.
Yeah, but I'm going to lose my mind if we lose that Utah game.
I get it.
I'm not going to lie to you.
I get it. But if you're 2-5, you still may be a top 40 or top 50 team, even with a terrible record like that. And then you win out, and you're, what, 8-5? And it's going to be a disappointing season. There is no doubt. I'm not saying it won't be a disappointing season. Out of the four games of Utah, Boise, Mississippi State, that's three games. out of those three games, you need to win at least one of those games for that first seven games to be a success. For it to be better than that, you have to win two. Those are the three games that fans need to be talking about, teams that we should, that we could beat but may not be favored in those games. Not the LSU and Wisconsin games. If anybody, like, those are special wins if you get them, but you can't anticipate winning either of those games. I mean,
no, but that's just the thing is, at the end of the day, if you get to the end, if you run through this schedule and you get to the end of this road with two or three losses, I mean, that's a great season.
Oh, that's a fantastic
up against this
season.
Schedule. That's a great. That's a ton. Yeah. That's this season will be a ton of fun if the only games we drop are LSU and Wisconsin. This will be one that we will remember, right? This will be a fun season. You lose a third game, okay? And I don't know who you lose it to. Maybe it's Utah. Maybe it's Boise State. Maybe it's Mississippi State on the road. I don't know, right? But, you know, as long as it's not, you know, San Jose State or UMass or something silly, you lose that third game. I still think this season is a ton of fun.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
We're going to enjoy that.
Absolutely.
You know, but I'm just coming back to Ryan Crockett's question here. It's a pretty common phenomenon for us as the summer goes on, and we're in the BYU football fandom echo chamber, right? We're all getting ourselves all excited with no new data, and then we're going to show up and we're going to obliterate Portland State, you know. And then maybe I don't know how the LSU game goes. I mean, maybe we're competitive. But what if we're competitive for three quarters?
Okay.
You know, and then we come out of that game and people are thinking, oh, man, now LSU, like, that's a pretty good program. But, I mean, we did okay. Like, we don't need to hang our heads. Like, we look pretty good. You know, and you get through and then you lose. I can see people having a little bit of an issue working their way through those first 4 or 5 weeks as their expectations have built up over the summer.
Well, if they do, they're dumb. Because you got to keep realistic expectations, because you're setting up the pain, not the team setting up the pain, right? Because it's all in your head, you know. But you're right. There will be a lot of people, if that scenario that you just said where we kill Portland State and are competitive with LSU for three quarters, the expectations are going to go too high, and they're going to be fueled by a lot of what Crockett is talking about, right? They're going to be fueled by all this stuff. Well, we're 37 minutes in and have not hit our two biggest topics so far for this show. So let's power on, okay? Coming up in a little bit, we're going to talk about independence. First, we're going to do off-season previews for both Utah and Utah State. We'll spend most of the time talking about Utah and not a lot of time on Utah State. So Matt, Utah. Obviously, last year they had a good season but not a great season. They were 9-4 last year, according to the Fangraphs, wrong sport. Football Outsiders, they were 43rd in the country in the S&P Plus rankings. They are projected this year to have a similar ranking, but a worse record because they've got a tough schedule. They have them at 6-6. That's what SB Nation and friend of the podcast Bill Connolly has them at. Matt, they had some really tough losses. Running back Joe Williams, cornerbacks Brian Allen and Reggie Porter, and safety Marcus Williams. So they lost a lot of talent. Some of it to the NFL this last year. They are also happen to be, Matt, in a pretty good conference in the Pac-12. Of course, being in the South with USC, improved Colorado team. And then I don't know if Arizona State, UCLA, or Arizona is going to be any good in the South. So it's probably those three aforementioned teams. Utah is the only team, I believe that is true, the only team that hasn't played in the Pac-12 championship game out of the South. I believe I read that somewhere.
Now you're just rubbing that in.
No, I'm not rubbing it in. No Utah fan listens to this podcast.
I hope not. But you never know. You just don't know.
I don't know that. You're right. So Matt, as you look at this team, okay, there's a couple of things that I think are interesting about Utah. Okay, their defense is almost always spectacular. Okay, Kyle Whittingham and his staff put together excellent defenses. Okay, They were really good against the run last year, good against the pass. They were a good defensive team, and they typically are a good defensive team. Their seasons, whether they can step beyond that, is whether their offense can be better than that. Okay? So, Matt, the question is, can their offense, which was last year was like a top 60, top 70 offense, after losing their best offensive player in Joe Williams, can they be better than that?
I see all the same things you're talking about. I don't see the offense making the jump this year. Right? I mean, I don't know who the names are. You know, you go through and we can talk about defensively, who these teams are or who these players are. I mean, I can rattle off some names of these guys, right?
Right.
You look at, the like Lotulelei and Mokofisi and Kylie Fitz. I mean, there's some guys on here that people who follow the Pac-12 know these names and recognize these guys. But even know who are they? I don't even know who we're talking about offensively with this team. And if you want to make the jump and compete in the Pac-12, I think the whole deal with them is they're going to have to figure out an offense, and they've struggled with that. A consistency with the offensive coaching staff, I think, has been a problem.
Been a big problem.
Like multiple coordinators and all this weird stuff. And they seem to have kind of worked their way through all of that. But now they've got a guy in here that I don't personally just don't know a lot about. And
Troy Taylor is the QB coach at Eastern Washington. New offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I don't even know what to do with that, right? I don't know how you measure that. But, I think that the expectation is they'll be throwing the ball a lot more and moving a little bit faster. But we all know, we've seen it. What happens if you don't have the right players on offense to try and, run the offense faster?
Yeah.
It's going to take you a couple years to figure that out because you got to get the right people in if you don't have them in already. And I don't know that I personally know if they've got the right tools in there right now. For me, I think this year looks a lot like in the past. Their defense is going to be really good. Their special teams will be sound, won't make a lot of mistakes. But offensively, especially when we play them, they're not going to have an identity yet.
Yeah, I think Troy Williams is the quarterback, maybe. There's a couple other quarterbacks on the roster, that could play into it. Williams certainly wasn't good enough last year where you would thought that he would, be amazing, right, this year. I mean, they were 80th in the country, according to Football Outsiders, in passing last year, 79th, I'm sorry. So it's not as if, he's a great quarterback. They have Alabama transfer Cooper Bateman, who's in there. They have, a couple of other quarterbacks that might be in there. They do have some talent at wide receiver, Matt, so if they get things going, but like you said, by the time they play us, that's going to be their second game. They're not going to have an offensive identity yet, and I think there's a very good chance that game is that game in the second Saturday in September is a defensive struggle, for sure. Well, let's talk a little bit about their schedule, Matt. So their schedule is an interesting one, okay, because they start at North Dakota, and then they have us, and then they have San Jose State. By the time they open up the Pac-12 conference schedule, they'll have played three games, none of whom, quite frankly, are, we're not a top 25 team, I don't think, this next year. So you look at that schedule and you say, okay, so this is what they've got. And then you look at after that, in their conference schedule. So Arizona, week off, Stanford, and USC. Now, they should win Arizona. Stanford and USC, those are two tough games. One at home, USC on the road. Then it gets a little easier, Arizona State, but then at Oregon. I mean, they're another team that could have a handful of losses in the first half of their season and still be a top 40 team.
Yeah, see, the tough part for their schedule, really, is that they've got to play Stanford and USC so early.
Yeah, for sure.
You got those games a little bit later and you could build up some momentum and give some of those teams a chance to play each other. I mean, if you look, I mean, just generally in the Pac-12, you know, you've got this year, I think you got USC, Washington, and Stanford, and then a gap, and then kind of everybody else, right? And Utah's right in that mix, and I think they could be third, fourth best team, right? Fourth, fifth best team or whatever. But if you want to beat Stanford and USC with a new offensive coordinator, I know you got a senior quarterback, and I talked about we don't know who any of these people are. I think we've heard of Troy Williams, right? But in a new system, I just think it's going to be tough. Especially when you've got to play two of those top three teams in October.
Yeah, that's tough. That's super tough.
Maybe if they played those games a little bit later in the season and had a chance to get an Arizona State and UCLA and Colorado, their big rival Colorado, under their belt earlier in the season, I think you'd be good. I mean, but by the time they get, I mean, Arizona's not any good. San Jose State's not any good. North Dakota's not any good.
So they have played one good team in the first four.
Right, yeah. So they're not even going to know where they're at.
Yeah, and then they finish at Washington and then Colorado at home. This is a weird, unbalanced schedule for them where they've got, like you said, kind of a slow start, then those two games, then they finish with, depending on how they do elsewhere, that Colorado game could be a big, huge game. But I mean, USC's going to be really good. Well, Matt, in interest of time, let's talk about Utah State a little bit and their offseason. So you and I have talked about this. This program seems to have peaked in 2012. And yeah. Wells comes in as the new coach, 19-9 in their first two seasons. But then it's been a little bit of a downturn since then. Matt, is this a team, I'll put it this way, is this a team that you're worried in any way, shape, or form about losing to in 2017?
This is going to sound bad, but no, I'm not.
I'm not worried about it.
You know, you look at what teams do, right? Just what programs do when programs make the leap. Use Utah as an example. So Urban Meyer comes in, and he's kind of a flash in the pan. Utah was a stepping stone for him. And it worked. You know, he left Utah, went on to Florida, now Ohio State, and he's great. He was never going to stay at Utah.
Right.
And but what Utah had to do was figure out a way to maintain some of that momentum. And they had a guy on staff that was able to do that for him. And so they were able to hold on to that. But you knew pretty quickly that it was going to work that way. What you see here is kind of the more likely or more common scenario there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, for sure.
Guy comes in, the program looks really good, look like it's on its way up, takes off for a better situation. And I think you know pretty quickly whether or not you're able to maintain that momentum or you're just going to become who you've always have been. And unfortunately for the Aggies, that's, the latter is really what happened to them.
Yeah, that's really the story, isn't it? That is most often what happens to these mid-major programs after somebody leaves to go up there. I think they'll be decent. I don't think there's much of a threat to us this particular season. It is in Logan, which we have had a little bit of difficulty in the recent past. But again, that was against better teams. I'm not really too worried about this particular team. They have some good... they get good pass defense over the last several years. Their offense is where they are have not been great. They brought in new offensive coordinator David Yost, so similar to their neighbors down in Salt Lake City, up in Logan. They will also be breaking in new offensive coordinator. Yost used to be the offensive coordinator at Missouri. All right, Matt, let's move on to Independence. We're gonna give a state of Independence. So basically, here's the thing. We're going to talk about the overall stuff, but everyone, every time I bring up Independence, so we got two tweet bag questions. Both of them are basically about football. Well, I don't know. Jared's may be about both football and basketball. So let's talk about Jared's first. No, actually, let's reverse that. We're going to do Brian's first. On Facebook, Brian Taylor, longtime listener, has this to ask. Okay. This is what he says, and I'm going to paraphrase him a little bit. He says, why not go back to the Mountain West and do what Boise State is doing? Attempt to run the table, go undefeated, win a big game or two against a P5 team, and then get into the New Year's 6 bowl game, and an outside chance at the berth of the college football playoff. Matt, why not do that?
I don't think that's real.
The New Year's 6 is real. I mean, if you're the top group of five team, you get one of those bowls. So that part's real. The second part.
So you've got to be the top one, right?
You have to be the top one of all the those five conferences.
Right. So you may have a one or two loss season, win the Mountain West Conference, and still not be that guy.
Correct.
So it's not like so it's not like every time you win the Mountain West and maybe one big non-conference game that you're going to end up in one of those New Year's bowls.
Correct.
But I think a lot of people think that way. I don't know if Brian's looking at it this way, but I think there's a lot of proponents of returning to another conference that see it that way in their heads, and that's just not the case.
Yeah, and the second part, I agree with everything you just said. The second part of his question about the berth of college football playoff, let me be very, very clear. Playing in a group of five conference, you will never get into the college football playoff ever, as it is constituted today. Your schedule will not be strong enough. The committee is never going to put you in over. That means that two of the Power Five conference champions will not be in the playoff. Right? Because there's only four spots. So if a group of five gets it, there's no way. You could go undefeated.
Have to go undefeated and have beaten two Power Five conference champions in your out-of-conference schedule.
I don't think even if that's the case, that's going to work. But yes, maybe if you beat two champions. But you are not going to make the college football playoff. BYU has a slight chance with their current schedules, as the way they are, to make the college football playoff, but only barely above a group of five. It's still a very, very small chance that BYU makes the college football playoff. So the one argument for the Mountain West is you probably have a better chance at getting a New Year's Six bowl or getting a New Year's bowl than you do as an independent. I will concede that point. That is because of the contracts. I mean, they have to take a group of five team. They don't have to take us, no matter where we're at. They might, but they don't have to. So, Matt, a lot of times this comes down to football. And so let's ask Jared Roundsville's question. That's at J Roundsville on Twitter. Where would BYU be now if we had stayed in the Mountain West Conference? Matt, we could do like a whole time machine episode on go year by year and where we think BYU would have like finished in the Mountain West Conference. We're not going to do that today, by the way. But Matt, where do you think we'd be? Is the program better off, worse off, if we had stayed in the Mountain West Conference?
I think right now we'd be almost exactly where we are. I mean, essentially.
I think we're worse off. You'd have less money coming into the program.
Oh, okay. I was thinking just in terms of standing and...
Well, I think you could be worse off. You know, but you're probably right. We're probably, as far as results on the field, wouldn't be a ton different.
No, and I think you'd look a lot like the way it did when we were there. You win, you'd compete pretty frequently. You compete for a Mountain West Conference championship, and you'd win. You know, and you'd have you every couple of years you'd have a really cool out of conference game, and you know maybe you win every few years you win one of those.
And a lot of these years, Boise State was better than us. And we wouldn't have won the Mountain West Conference, right? So, you know, there's that. The other piece is, like, we get to play Boise State every year now, basically, right?
Right.
And that's pretty cool. The other part is we're basically, like Notre Dame's in the ACC, we're kind of in the Mountain West Conference, right? Right?
Well, yeah, from a scheduling standpoint.
Yeah. We're kind of in there, right? We play in our 2017 schedule. We have Boise State, San Jose State, Fresno, UNLV. That's four games.
So here's five. I agree with everything you said about the playoff, right? The way the playoff's set up right now, we're not getting in and neither is Boise State, okay? So you don't need to be in the Mountain West Conference to get any closer to a playoff spot. That's just not going to happen. Now, in terms of a New Year's Day bowl, I think about the comment you just made, right? And I pull up Utah State's schedule or Boise State's schedule for 2017. When people are making decisions about a New Year's Day game, let's say BYU, you know, does the really cool thing here and loses two games this year. Okay? Okay. They lose to LSU and they lose to Wisconsin. And a New Year's Day game is now looking at a Boise State, right? Okay. Now, Boise State, if that happens, Boise State will have lost to us. And maybe they lost to, I don't know, Washington State. Virginia. They're not going to lose to Virginia, right? So maybe we're their only loss.
Yeah.
Right? So okay. We're a two-loss team who lost to LSU and Wisconsin. And Boise State out of the Mountain West Conference is a one-loss team that lost to us. Who's okay. going to that New Year's Day game if it's just a pure decision between the two? Who do you think they're going to take?
Probably BYU, but I think it's close. But I might lean towards BYU. I get your argument.
But does being in the conference help us in that respect?
It maybe helps because us because be it's contractually... Champion? No, it helps us because it's contractually obligated that the best group of five team gets in. Otherwise, your argument is 100% correct. It only helps you because the contract says it does. It doesn't do anything for you to quote-unquote win a conference. Unless, of course, your conference championship game, say whoever is in that game against them. Let's say, you know, so they win the Mountain Conference and then the West Conference turns out to be San Diego State and they're also a top 25 team, right? So you get an extra game against a top 25 team. Maybe that puts you above, you know, and we don't have the chance to get that. But if it's you play Hawaii and they're the champ and they're not very good, that doesn't help you at all, right? Relatively
right,
speaking.
And you could go in there and get upset.
Yeah, yeah. So Matt, we don't have time to get into all the specifics of independence. We're going to have to do like a part two of this because we got way into what's going to happen this season and expectations, which was awesome. But let me put it this way. From an independent standpoint for football, you and I think it's better to be independent than be in the Mountain West Conference, right? We've argued yeah. this pretty much since the day independence started. In basketball, I think, if I'm not misquoting you, we've both said we'd rather be in the Mountain West Conference than be in the West Coast Conference.
Yeah.
Okay? It's a deeper conference, some rivalries, some different things. Though, I don't hate the West Coast Conference, and I kind of enjoy it to a certain extent. You?
It's okay.
It's okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've been
I'd really
a couple
rather
road
be
games.
Playing basketball at the Mountain West.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, for sure. For the rest of the sports, it's kind of a mixed bag. Some sports, I think it's a little better. Some, it's irrelevant, right? Like volleyball, we're Doesn't playing matter. In the same conference that we were playing in before. So it all boils down to this. Is the benefits of being independent in football outweigh the fact that the program has to play in a lesser conference in basketball? Now, my opinion is yes, because it brings in more money to the program, gives us a lot of flexibility. Being in the West Coast Conference has its benefits, even if it's not as good as being in the Mountain West from a you know pure basketball standpoint. What's your take, Matt? Does that kind of take off and you still think, or is it more neutral? Like, yeah, it's great for football, but not as good for basketball. So, yeah, it's fine, but not that big of a deal.
I go back to the two buzzwords that were used when BYU declared their independence.
Yes.
In the first place, right?
All right.
So it was about access and exposure. Now, okay. Access, let us all remember that it was not about access to a college football playoff system. It wasn't access to bowls. It was fans and alumni access to be able to watch games and go to games. That's what the access was. Did independence deliver on that? Is that a worthy goal? I believe that it is. I lived on the East Coast during the days of the Mountain Network, and it was a nightmare to try and watch BYU games. It was a total joke. And even when you could get them, the announcing was terrible. They weren't in HD. It was a joke. It was laughable, right? So, and did independence deliver on that? Absolutely. exposure. So the exposure was getting the athletes the opportunity to compete at the highest levels. Now, here's where you start talking about access to bowl games, access to championships, right? So on the football world, like, is there, with the options available to BYU, which is basically the Mountain West or independence, do I think independence delivers just as good or a better a shot to compete in that space? I don't know, and that's what we've just been debating. But one thing that BYU's football independence definitely delivers in the exposure space, in terms of exposure for the program, let people see the game, let more fans see the games, let the athletes compete against the best programs. Yeah. I mean, look at the schedule.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the football schedule and what we're doing there. So I think it's delivered on those two goals, and maybe I've mixed them up a little bit, you know, between the two, but I think I've kind of caught the spirit of what we were after, and I think they were good goals and we've delivered on them.
Yeah.
So I still think we're better off.
I think it's someday. Go ahead.
I'd love to be in a big conference.
Well, we're not going to be.
I still pine for the Big 12.
The Big 12, I think that ship has I'm not going to close the door on it completely cuz I have nothing to do with it. But I think that ship has unfortunately sailed. I think as a fan, it has been a win for me as a fan because I can see more of our games both in basketball and football, right? As a program and the strength of the program, I think it's been fairly neutral to positive. We're getting some games against some really high-profile competition more than we'd be able to get otherwise, right? It's just that's just, I mean, we're playing LSU, Utah, Wisconsin, Boise, Mississippi State all in the same season. You can't do that with a conference schedule unless, you know, and none of those teams that I just talked about are in the same conference, right? Unless you're in a Power 5 conference, you can't get that many good games on your schedule. Heck, even if you're in Power 5 conference, depending on the year and the divisions, you may not get that many good games on your schedule, right? So
right.
I'm with you. I'd rather be in a Power 5 conference. Someday, it may not work to remain independent in football. You may have to go and join the Mountain West or Conference USA or whatever, the American or some new conference that comes out of those and tries to get all of the good group of five teams all in one conference. You may have to do that. And if someday those conferences all get together and try to put the best 12 or 14 teams in one conference, that may be the time where you jump from the independent stuff to that. But otherwise, I think you're absolutely right. I think they've accomplished exactly what they set out to do. My one big thing, bowl games. I hate this we don't have any idea and have no tie to a bowl game. It's great. Yep. If you're good that year and you surprise, but I'm looking at all the bowl games for next year, and you could end up in a really crappy bowl even if you're pretty good.
Yeah, this is a live by the sword, die by the sword situation with the bowls.
Yeah, you know, and I get it. ESPN has said on Media Day that they're going to take, or at least they didn't say it, Tom Homo said, they're going to take care of us, right? And they kind of run that, but it still makes me a little nervous.
Yeah, well, it's unknown, right? But, you know, I think the flexibility, what you're creating for yourself is a shot for a really cool bowl matchup. But the price for that is increased risk that you end up playing Wyoming.
Yes, yes. Or somebody even less appealing than Wyoming, if that's possible. Is there somebody less appealing than Wyoming?
I don't know. Is there a place less appealing than Laramie?
Well, we wouldn't be playing in Laramie.
Oh, can you imagine?
A bowl game.
Can you imagine?
If somebody put together a bowl game in Laramie?
Yeah, and we ended up in it?
That'd be terrible. Right. We should just say at that point.
I think you'd... Well, you can't... Well, do you say no? I mean, who are we, right?
Oh, you can say no. You should say no, if that's the case. Well, Matt, we will be back next week. We're going to talk about LSU.
And oh, here we go.
We may throw in some State of Independence stuff, depending on who I schedule as a guest. Matt, the other part is we will be off the next week, as I will be out of town on vacation. But we'll be back next week. Couple things to look out for. Our annual survey will be coming soon, so we should have it ready to roll by next week. So check that out. Matt, I'd remind everybody, if you like this show, there's some other cool podcasts at DeseretNews.com/podcast, including my Bleep podcast, where I'm working on an episode about the Planet of the Apes series. So you need to go watch all three of those movies so you can then listen to that podcast and be amazed at my analysis of it.
I can't wait.
You should. No, you can't. You're dying with anticipation. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. We hope you enjoyed the show. As I said, we will be back next week with more discussion, nonsense, and everything else that we do so well. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.